Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on food irradiation when we come back. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant. It was negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai. You and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits. Benefits such as rain in due season, multiplied gold, silver herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, George Bush said that what Americans wanted was jobs, jobs, jobs. But that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and the Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognized that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money's in private business. The money is in sales. It's not in public business, and it's certainly not in jobs, jobs, jobs. That's why I contend that it's time that you cashed in on your inheritance and learned how to collect those benefits from the old covenant contract and to collect your benefits in gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. That's called property instead of credit, debt, usury, inflation, and more worthless paper. Now, if you'd like to learn how to do just that, why don't you call for more information on my CD Home School for Adults and order the free General Law CD package at the same time. Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational. Best of all, it's free. You can call right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and then send an email request for that free General Law CD package. That's the place to start. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, this week we've been talking about irradiation. Last time I pointed out to you that we're getting screwed, blued, and tattooed every time we buy one of these products that's been irradiated because it loses 20 to 80% of its nutritional value. That's my biggest complaint. In fact, it's probably going to give me cancer. It's probably going to soak me up in benzene and free radicals. But the number one complaint is that I get screwed 20 to 80% in the loss of the vitamins and the nutrients that are in the foods that I buy that have been irradiated. Now, we've been talking about, or at least skirting around the outside of, why do these people want to use irradiation? And the answer is shelf life. It's just that simple. Shelf life. There's a second reason. It's called lawsuits. Lawsuits. You see, the lawsuits amount to a lot of money, but the shelf life amounts to even more. I remember some years back, the Ford Motor Company, it was exposed, it came out in trial, knew about a defect in the Ford Pinto automobile. The defect was in the gas tank, and when these Ford Pinto automobiles were struck in the rear, oftentimes, not every time, but oftentimes, they would catch on fire. The gas tank was in the rear of the vehicle, and when the vehicle got hit and it caught on fire, sometimes people inside the car would be burned up. They would be killed by the fire. They survived the wreck. They died in the fire. So the Ford Motor Company, for many, many years, had been sued over this defect, And they had been paying out quite a sizable amount of money. They'd pay out $1 million here and $1 million there. And it came out in trial. There was three teenage girls, I think it was up in Michigan, that were killed. And the question arose, how much are three blonde, blue-eyed teenage girls worth dead on arrival at the morgue? And the answer was $1 million a copy. Because the Ford Motor Company had decided as a strategic move that they would fight the lawsuits on the Pinto automobile rather than to repair the damage or repair the fault or the flaw in the gas tank. Here's the logic behind it. Makes all the sense in the world. The Ford people figured that to recall all those cars and fix all those defects was going to cost them more than $100 million. And that with all of the people that were dead, 54 people, there's all that had died in these automobile wrecks, at $1 million a copy is only $54 million, or about one half. So it's cheaper to do the lawsuits than it is to repair the flaw, irrespective of the 54 people that died. Well, the last jury got a little bit ticked off at the Ford Motor Company's reasoning and dinged them $100 million or so on that last wreck. That's what prompted Ford to recall all of those cars and then fix them. So in the long run, it cost them $100 million to fix the cars, $100 million in the last lawsuit, plus $54 million for the 54 dead bodies. But that's the rational basis by which multinational corporations make decisions. It doesn't have anything to do with right and wrong or ethics or morals. It has to do with money. What is the logical business decision to make? And from the Ford Company's point of view, the logical business decision was fight the lawsuits and pay the damages, don't repair the problem. Now, when we talk about irradiated food, if you stop and think about it, irradiation makes all the sense in the world. Three packing companies control 80% of the beef in the country. And every once in a while, they get dinged. They get sued. And when they get sued, they have to pay a damage. You know, E. coli killed a kid eating a hamburger at Big Mac or someplace, and they have to pay out $1 million or $2 million. And that makes sense. Let's not clean up the packing plants or the feedlots or the dirty beef, because that's going to cost us $100 million or $200 million. But they've got a solution to the problem, which is called pasteurization. That's what we did with the milk. We're not going to clean up the product. What we're going to do is we're going to kill the bacteria. We're going to treat the effect, not the cause. Now, the cause of the Ford problem was the faulty gas tank. We're not going to fix the cause. We're going to treat the effects of that come from that cause. And that's what the meat packers are doing with irradiation. And in order to get us to go along with the program, they have to sell us on the idea. And part of the process of selling us the idea is called cold pasteurization. So here's a short one-page article. The FDA allows food companies to change the irradiation label to cold pasteurization. So propaganda comes into the mix, and the media comes in. So what we're going to do is we've got a product here that nobody wants to buy, but we want to sell it to them because it's in our best interest. So let's spend the money to sell the product to the people who don't want to buy it. Listen to this. The U.S. food companies can seek federal approval to avoid using the word irradiation on labels of foods treated with the bacteria-killing process and instead use language such as cold pasteurization, the Food and Drug Administration said. Irradiation, which has been endorsed by the World Health Organization, exposes food to low doses of electrons or gamma rays to destroy deadly microorganisms such as E. coli and Salmonella. It has been approved by U.S. regulators for use with raw chicken and raw beef, as well as spices and dried seasonings. But food companies have been slow to adopt the treatment for raw meat and poultry because of the cost of the equipment and worries about consumer acceptance. Currently, foods treated with the technology must carry labels saying either treated with irradiation or treated by irradiation. They must also bear a special symbol known as the radura, which consists of green petals in a broken circle. Some food makers say consumers interpret the radura symbol and the word irradiation as a food safety warning. Critics say that the industry is trying to use euphemisms to hide that their products are irradiated. And some green groups and environmentalists fear using high-energy radiation in food products could have harmful side effects for consumers. The FDA issued guidelines explaining how companies can petition the agency to use more neutral language on the label of food treated with irradiation. In its petition, a food company must submit consumer research that shows a comprehension of the new proposed label. Ah, there it is in plain language. Cold pasteurization is a euphemism for irradiation. In other words, as I showed you last time, the nutritional deficiencies ran from 20 to 80%. Those of us that know that and avoid, and that's 36 million of us now, we avoid irradiated and GMO foods like we avoid AIDS, herpes, and VD. I mean, we're running in the other direction. They can't sell that to us. But we represent a large portion of the market. Now, as we discovered last time here on the show, the majority of Americans, just the average Joe Sixpack, when he is interviewed up in the 75% range, wants irradiated food labeled and doesn't want to buy it, or he thinks that it may be deleterious to his health or somebody else's health. Now that's the problem that the food processors have to overcome. And they're in the process of overcoming that problem. They give a lot of money in the form of bribes to legislators. And we call that in this country campaign contributions. We don't call it gifts and bribes. We have a different label for it. We Americans like euphemisms. We like different labels. Like, we don't like homosexuals. We like gay people. So by hanging another label on this, see, we can clean it up. We can make it sound real good, can't we? And that's what we're doing here with irradiation. Hey, we'll call that cold pasteurization. We'll clean that up and make it sound and make it feel real good. Well, pasteurization has now been redefined by the U.S. Department of Agriculture Committee. God bless these bureaucrats anyway. The industry comes along and says, hey, listen, we need a little help here to put a little better image here on this bad product. So help us out a little bit. And the USDA comes right to the fore. And this comes from the Food Chemical News. That ought to make you just real appetizing. Food Chemical News. Food Chemical. Kind of sounds like to me as opposite ends of the pole. It sounds like Food Chemical News sounds like virgin whore at Flo's. Anyway, late last month, the National Advisory Committee on Microbiological Criteria for Foods completed a difficult semantic and scientific task redefining the term pasteurization and setting parameters for judging whether a process is its equal. The sometimes tedious exercise was a ramification of the 2002 Farm Bill, which in rather circuitous language mandated that the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act be amended to include a definition of pasteurization. The committee's scientific advice will be used by the Food and Drug Administration to help draft a regulation proposing such a definition. Bob Brackett, director of the agency's Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition, told Food Chemical News. Now, as you may recall, the small section that slipped into the bill quickly became controversial, as it was seen by many as a fig leaf for allowing irradiation to be called pasteurization. The irradiation industry and some of its proponents have long wanted to give the process a more euphemistic name in the hopes of garnering better acceptance for such foods. Let me just pause here for a moment. They do that in fish. You know, fish have some really nasty names, like puffer fish. So what they do is they come along and they call these fish by a different name. They invent a sexier name, kind of like naming an automobile. You know, this is the Impala or the Hummer. See, we don't want to call it the gas guzzler or the ugly frog. We want to call it the Impala. We want to call it the Hummer. We don't want to label it what it really is, so we come up with a euphemistic name, something that really sounds good. The tobacco industry did that. You know, they come up with neat names like Salem cigarettes. That's a nice sounding name. You know, like lung cancer sticks. You know, that doesn't sound very good. That isn't something that makes you just want to rush out and buy a pack of lung cancer sticks, and so we call them Salem cigarettes. And then we paint a picture. See, we used to advertise them on television, and we'd picture this girl in a swing, and this guy's behind her. Both of them have a cigarette in their hands, and they're swinging out here in green grass, and there's tulips and flowers growing around out here, you know. It's as fresh as spring. They don't want to show you a picture of a guy in a hospital bed over here breathing through a hole in his throat. That isn't conducive to selling the product. And we've got the same thing going on here with irradiation. We're going to dress this product up. We're going to call it by euphemistic names. We're going to paint a picture over here that'll just make you want to buy it. You won't know what you're buying, but you're going to want to buy it. Now, indeed, under specified conditions, this new definition would allow irradiated foods to be labeled as pasteurized, although the word irradiation would also have to appear, at least according to current FDA regulations. Well, under current FDA regulations, if we can change the regulations to include the word pasteurized, can't we then later drop the word irradiation? I mean, come on, guys. All we're talking about here is drafting a law and then amending it. But in the 67-page report finalized at last month's meeting, the NACMCF, boy, that's an acronym, isn't it? The NACMCF. Don't ask me what that is. I haven't got a clue. But whoever this outfit is, they also set parameters for calling food treated with a whole range of new and old technologies pasteurized. Those technologies include pulsed electric fields, ohmic heating, high pressure processing, and even just plain cooking. We're going to use these names like pulsed electric field, ohmic heating, high pressure processing, and cooking, and we're going to call it pasteurized. As such, the committee's redefinition is far broader than the familiar meaning of the word pasteurization, but as Jenny Scott, the subcommittee member and senior director of food safety programs at the National Food Processors Association put it, I don't think that anyone on the subcommittee disagreed that pasteurization could be broader, adding that most scientists have long used the term to describe processes that kill microorganisms. I like the names that these associations use. It's called the Food Safety Program at the National Food Processors Association. Excuse me, boys and girls. Excuse me. I can't contain myself. If I develop a process that produces benzene in meat, benzene is a carcinogen. Benzene is a dirty, nasty chemical that normally comes out of oil refineries. Benzene. It's a carcinogen. It's a product, a chemical that causes cancer. All right. Now, we can produce benzene by irradiating beef. Would you call that food safety? Well, let me ask you this. You come into my restaurant and you sit down and you order a steak dinner. And you say, well, do you have any steak sauce? And I said, right here, we have the house special benzene steak sauce. And I set it on the counter. I set it on your table. And you take my special benzene steak sauce and you liberally sprinkle it on your steak. Would you call that food safety? I would call it poisoning. It isn't going to kill you right away. It's going to give you cancer and you won't die for 30 years. And it probably tastes real good. And if it doesn't, we'll put a little sugar and salt in it and flavor it for you, and it'll taste real good. Now, all of these outfits use lies. I mean, after all, that's the purpose behind fraud. You know, a con man has to sound good, look good, and be very convincing. Otherwise, he wouldn't be a con man. He'd just be an ordinary jerk that couldn't convince you that he was selling siding at half price. And then when he sells you the siding for half price, he doesn't deliver it and he skips town with your money. That's a con man. He's somebody that you trust. He's somebody that you believe in. And in order for a con man to be successful, he can't come up and say, I'm selling rusty screws. He comes up and tells you, I am selling brand new screws over here that are shiny screws. I sell shiny screws, not rusty screws. I'm selling food safety. I mean, my God, if I came along and said, I am selling food death. I'm here to kill you with food. I'm here to poison you with salmonella. I'm here to poison you with benzene. I'm here to destroy your life by destroying 20 to 80% of the nutrients in your food so that you'll starve to death. That's what I'm here to sell. Hell, I couldn't sell that, and neither could you or anybody else. People aren't stupid. If you come and tell them the truth, they'll make the right decision in their own self-interest. In order for us to kill you, in order for us to steal from you, in order for us to con you, we have to come up and lie to you and make you believe it. That's what cold pasteurization is all about. And that's what the Department of Agriculture and the Food and Drug Administration are up to. And they've got a committee here. And this committee, like Madison Avenue. And I've got to tell a little story here on myself. You know, when we're sitting around and we're trying to sell you people on something, we have to come up with a line. We have to come up with a story. Well, back about 1980, when interest rates were hitting 21%, can any of you remember 1980, interest rates 20%? Jimmy Carter was president, you know. The inflation was running 13%. Well, the associates. Now, that the associates, like Beneficial Finance, is a finance company. And they charge around 35%, 36%, I think, at that time in Idaho, was the maximum interest rate, 36%. Now, would you think 36% interest was usury? Would you think that that was mafia or Cosa Nostra, loan sharking? 36% interest. Now, I was a retailer there, and so I was selling furniture, and when I sold my furniture, I would sell the furniture to you, and I would sign a contract with you. And I would tell you that I'm going to sell you this furniture, and you'd want to know, well, what's the interest rate? And I would say 12% add-on interest. Once in a while, somebody would say, well, what is add-on interest? Well, it's the methodology by which the interest is computed. And everybody would look at me, nod their head, and say, oh, okay. Okay. Not one person ever asked me in the years that I was in the retail business what 12% add-on interest would do in place of simple interest or compound interest or some other form of interest. Not one person ever asked. I call it the Emperor's New Clothes Syndrome. None of us want to appear to be stupid. So when I say I'm weaving these magical, beautiful new clothes on my loom and only fools can't see them, you don't want to say, well, I don't see anything in your loom. Oh, my God. You don't see anything? Look real carefully. Look real close. Look at the loom. Can you see the beautiful gold and silver fabric that I'm weaving here? No, I don't see a thing. Oh, well, you poor fellow, you are a fool. Only fools cannot see this beautiful fabric that I'm weaving in this loom. Now, you know, you heard that fairy tale and you laugh and you say, well, surely that can't happen in the real world. Oh, sure, happens all the time. We salesmen take advantage of it. It's called vanity. Nobody wants to admit that he's dumb. Nobody wants to admit that he's a fool. Nobody wants to admit he doesn't understand 12% add-on interest. Hell, I didn't know what add-on interest was until they explained it to me. Yeah, it's the methodology by which we compute the interest. And so what we do is we compute the interest on the loan, the outstanding balance, not as it comes due, but right up front for 36 months and 36 payments. Then we take the interest payments first, and then if you default, you still owe us for the principal. You have absolutely no equity. It's kind of like an adjustable rate mortgage. You have absolutely no equity in this house whatsoever. No equity in this furniture whatsoever. You're just paying the interest. And then when you add it up over 36 months, how much does this come out to be in simple terms, in simple interest terms? And it's 32% interest. 12% add-on came out to 32% interest. And I'm advertising to these people, see, when you're buying this furniture, you believe it's 12% interest. It is. It's 12% add-on. Then when you do the rest of the arithmetic, it equals 32% simple interest. Now, that's what they're doing to us here with this pasteurization here, the redefinition. When they come in here, it's like advertising. We sit around the table figuring out ways that we can lie to you and get you to believe it. That's the purpose of sales. That's what we're in business for. That's the way we sell cars. It's the way we sell everything, by lying to you. But you see, the law comes along and says, well, you can't lie to these people directly. I mean, you can't tell them that the interest rate is 12%. You have to use the words add-on. I was drilled. I was instructed. If you tell these people it's 12% interest and they sue you for a refund, they'll win. 12% interest is a bald-faced lie. 12% add-on interest is the truth. But nobody knows what add-on means. And because they don't know what it means, you had full disclosure. We told you that irradiation would depreciate the nutrient value. We just didn't tell you how much. So in the last program, I told you how much. It's 20 to 80%. So we gave you full disclosure when we said, yes, there is some nutrient loss. My God, boys and girls, would you say that 80% nutrient loss is... there is some nutrient loss. Yeah, I would say that is some nutrient loss. All right, 80%. But then the good news is, in some foods, it's only 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, or 70%. It's not 80. It's just in some foods that it's 80%. Some foods it only is 50%. All right, boys and girls, you getting the drift? All right. So the Food and Drug Administration and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, in conjunction with Iowa Beef and all some of these other meat packers, there's three of them there. Oh, it was ConAgra and Cargill and Iowa Beef. Those are the three that control 80% of the beef market in the country. Those three companies with the FDA and the Department of Agriculture are working through a committee, and their express purpose is to lie to you, deceive you, and to sell you irradiated food under some other name that you won't recognize. Like 12%, that's the truth, add-on interest, which doesn't tell you what you need to know, which obfuscates what we're doing. And that's what cold pasteurization is all about. But that's not all. There's more to the story. Now, as such, the committee's referendum or redefinition is far broader than the familiar meaning of pasteurization. But as Jenny Scott, the subcommittee member and senior director of food safety programs at the National Food Processors Association put it, now here's the quote. He says, I don't think that anyone on the subcommittee disagreed that pasteurization could be broader, adding that most scientists have long used the term to describe processes that kill microorganisms. So any process that kills microorganisms is going to now be accepted as pasteurization. And that's because scientists accept it as that. Scientists do? I didn't know that. Let me give you a quick illustration. 9 out of 10 doctors smoke camels. Do you believe that? They used to advertise things like that. It was a pretty common methodology. 8 out of 10 doctors recommend Anacin. 9 out of 10 doctors. 9 out of 10 somebodies. Well, here's the way you get away with that. It's a bald-faced lie. The implication is that of all the doctors in the United States of America, 9 out of every 10, 90% of all doctors in America smoke Camel cigarettes. That's a bald-faced lie. I don't believe that for a minute. However, they're not lying to you. It's the truth. They go out and they get 10 doctors. And they say, doctor, identify yourself. He says, my name is Dr. Joe Smedley. They get 10 doctors. 9 of the 10 doctors smoke Camels. Then they come up and they say, okay, now we've got an advertisement coming up here. Will you testify that you smoke Camels? Yep. And will you? Yep. 9 of them say, yep. And you, doc, what do you smoke? I smoke Winston. Okay. Well, then 9 out of the 10 doctors that we interviewed smoke Camel. So we come up with this advertising program and we say 9 out of 10 doctors smoke Camels. 9 out of 10 doctors recommend Camels. 9 out of 10 doctors recommend Anacin. I think that's a bald-faced lie. Well, they go out and they get 9 doctors. Do you recommend Anacin? Yes. Do you recommend Anacin? Yes. And you, do you recommend Anacin? Yes. They get 9 doctors to recommend Anacin, and they come up to the 10th guy and say, well, what do you recommend? He says, well, I recommend Bufferin. Okay. Well, will you testify that you recommend Anacin? Yeah. And you? Yeah. You? Yeah. Okay. For the purposes of our ad, 9 doctors out of 10 recommend Anacin. That's the way they do that. That's the way they justify it. Now, you listen to that lie over and over and over and over and over, and pretty soon you become so desensitized to that lie. First time you hear it, you say, well, I don't believe it. Second time you hear it, could that possibly be true? The third time you hear it, God, they keep telling me that. And about the 15th time you hear it, well, it's got to have some merit to it. And then by the time you've heard it 30, 50, or 100 times, yep, 9 out of 10 doctors recommend Anacin. 9 out of 10 doctors smoke Camels. And pretty soon we're going to accept pasteurization. Oh, yeah, pasteurization. They pasteurize our beef. They pasteurize our chicken. They pasteurize our milk. Oh, that's good. Yeah. Now, in your mind, pasteurization is where you heat treat milk at 165 degrees for 20 seconds to kill the bacteria. That's pasteurization. That isn't what they're talking about here with beef and chicken. They're talking about cesium-137 and cobalt-60, and we're going to nuke it. And we're going to create benzene. And we're going to destroy 20 to 80% of the vitamins and nutrients in this product. We're going to kill all the enzymes, and then we're going to sell that stuff to you. It's called cold pasteurization. Well, it's a bald-faced lie, but it's legal. There's nothing wrong with it. And besides that, we've got the USDA and the FDA to back us up. Isn't that just real special? All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember that the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, politics, history, religion, health, news, and current events. 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the FDA and the Department of Agriculture and the redefinition of this term called irradiation. We're going to redefine it. We're going to change what it's up to or what it means. Now, here's the new definition of pasteurization that the committee came up with. It calls for any process, treatment, or combination thereof that is applied to food to reduce the most resistant microorganisms of public health significance to a level that is not likely to present a public health risk under normal conditions of distribution and storage. There is a language barrier. One of the biggest challenges facing the group, according to the FDA's John Vinberg, and it's spelled K-V-E-N-B-E-R-G, I think the K is silent, John Vinberg, chairman of the Redefining Pasteurization Subcommittee, was the fact that new science has, or was emerging as the subcommittee was deliberating. Another major factor was that the subcommittee struggled with the language and intent of the farm bill that he told FCN. Now, indeed, the subcommittee's report elaborately fleshes out every phrase of the definition, but sometimes the phrases are slightly different than the farm bill language, an illustration of how lawmaking and science doesn't always work. It doesn't always mesh. For example, the farm bill referred to a food being pasteurized if it had been subjected to a process that is reasonably certain to achieve destruction or elimination in the food of the most resistant microorganisms. However, the microbiologists on the subcommittee knew, as they wrote in the report, that total destruction or elimination cannot be achieved because there is a statistical probability that an organism, that's one organism, will survive in a fraction of the products. Maybe only 1 in 1 million packages. That's why in their above definition, they defined it as a process that would reduce the most resistant microorganism. All right, so when you're writing a law, you need to put in loopholes. So if we're going to allow one microorganism in 1 million packages to survive, could there be two microorganisms in one package that survive? Well, yeah, I guess we could grant them that. Maybe two of these germs could survive. Well, could three of these germs survive? Well, yeah, it could be three. Now, boys and girls, we know that pasteurization of milk does not kill all of the organisms in the milk. Sometimes disease epidemics break out in communities where the pasteurization of the milk was incomplete, or the pasteurization didn't work on 50 or 100 or 200 cartons that slipped through. Now remember, the milk supply is dirty. I mean, that stuff is full of bugs. And we rely upon pasteurization to kill the bugs. Now, if you don't kill the bugs, then you're sending those bugs out and you're going to be feeding those to people. You're feeding these dangerous microorganisms. Now, here's what happens. Because we rely upon the pasteurization process, we don't need to be careful about keeping the milk clean. No need to. Yeah, I can remember as a dairyman, as a kid, we used to shoot penicillin right into the bulk tank. Here's what would happen. You know, you're milking 200 cows. I mean, that's the way life is. You're milking 200 cows. And one cow comes in and she's got mastitis. Now, you're supposed to leave the tit cup off of the hard quarter. But, you know, sometimes you forget. Or sometimes, you know, as you're preparing the cow to put the milking machine on, you don't feel the hard quarter, so you put the milking machine on. When you take them off, you feel the hard quarter. Now, all of those bacteria that were in that mastitis quarter are into the pipeline, and by now they're into the bulk tank. Well, boys and girls, honest to God, do you believe that we're going to go open the valve and pour 1,000 gallons of milk out because 2 quarts of it came in there and it was full of pus? I mean, let's grow up and get real. So what we do is we go in there and we take a couple, 3 tubes of penicillin and we shoot it into the tank so that the antibiotic will kill that bacteria that's in the tank to keep our bug count low. Because see, when the milk truck driver comes by and picks up the load of milk, you got to remember that he takes a sample of that and then they test that milk, you know, for bacteria count. All right, so after a while, they found out that there were so many farmers sticking so much penicillin into the milk that it was causing adverse reactions in people who were allergic to penicillin. So they had to wake up one day and say, okay, we got to have a new rule. We've got to stop putting penicillin into the bulk tanks. So they started testing for penicillin. So now if they catch you with excessive bug count or if they catch you with penicillin in the tank, they're going to burn you. So we stopped putting penicillin in the tank and we started putting dehydrostreptomycin or terramycin or some other antibiotic in the tank. You got that? And then pretty soon as people were complaining about, gee, we're getting more and more resistant people to antibiotics, they started testing for those and more and more regulations come on. The problem, boys and girls, is with these factory farms. That's where the problem develops, factory farming. And that's what we want to do in this country. We want factory farms. We want the monopoly on the beef trade. We want a monopoly on milk. That's why Mid-America Dairies has the monopoly here in the Midwest on milk and milk production. You either sell to Mid-America or you don't sell milk. See how simple that is? It's a monopoly. And that's what capitalism tends to. Capitalism tends to monopoly. And then when we get a monopoly, then we have a fascist welfare state. That's where we're at today in America. Now, the fascist welfare state is where the corporations control the regulators. See, the objective here, we want the government regulators to control the corporations and to protect us. And that works for a while. And pretty soon, the corporations, with their campaign contributions, remember, to the politicians, pretty soon the politicians, when they appoint people as bureaucrats to work at the FDA, you know, those appointments over there can be terminated. You want to be the director of FEMA? Okay. You got to play ball with Halliburton and the major corporations. And if you want to be the head of the FDA, you got to play ball with IBT and with Cargill and the food processing companies, Swift and Armour Star and the rest of them. So now the corporations control the regulatory process, and that's what we're discussing here. The regulators are coming up with legal language to lie to us in the official statutes and regulations. Are going to come right out in the Federal Register, in the Code of Federal Regulations, and they're going to say, this is the new definition for irradiation. We're going to call it pasteurization. Isn't that just special? Now, indeed, the subcommittee's report elaborately fleshes out every phrase of the definition. And they went through it, and they're going to make sure that the science and the directive from Congress mesh so that it's scientifically correct and that it's legally correct, but it's BS and they're going to lie to us. And that's what business is all about. That's what law is all about. It's how do you lie to these people, make them believe it, love it, and buy the product. Now, despite the changes, the intent of what's in the Farm Bill is captured in the definition, said subcommittee member Scott. When the subcommittee sat down and began to argue the nuances, it realized some wording had to be tweaked. But we certainly weren't intending to go around Congress's intent. So after clarifying the phrases and the definition, the report answers the five questions posed to the subcommittee by the FDA and the USDA. Thus, the first 13 pages of the lengthy document are the most crucial. The remaining section is a detailed look at more than a dozen processes and technologies and answers to the five questions as they relate to each. Fresher under pressure. So while Scott said that she certainly believes that the original congressional action to redefine pasteurization stemmed from the wishes of irradiation proponents, other industries may be looking at the term and using the term as well. Scott said that some manufacturers that use ultraviolet light to treat cider, for example, would like to use it. And at least one food industry attorney was sitting in the audience at last month's meeting to take notes for his interested clients. Makers of high-pressure processing and high-pressure processing equipment and those that use it have also been closely watching the committee, monitoring the pasteurization issue. Terry Anstein, the director of marketing for Avure Technologies Incorporated, told FCN that use of the word pasteurized on HPP products, high-pressure pasteurization, or high-pressure product, would be marketing benefit since people understand it. Well, of course, everybody understands pasteurization. But did you understand high-pressure processing equipment? High-pressure processing. Did you understand that? Now, I'm just reading the article. I don't know what the hell high-pressure processing is. I haven't got a clue. I never heard the term before I read this article. And instead of playing the emperor's new clothes, I'm just going to come forward and say, I don't know what the hell that is, but they're going to call that pasteurization from now on. And they want to use that word because it's kind of like the word that we use to describe an automobile. It's a Lexus. Now, you know, until recently, I didn't know that Toyota made that a Lexus, a Lexus automobile. I just happened to be reading an ad the other day. And I thought, Lexus, where does that come from? I didn't know if it was a Chevrolet or a Ford or a Chrysler or a German or a Japanese. And the other day I was reading something, and the connecting link between Toyota and Lexus came out. But you see, those names sell cars. Now, now that I know that a Lexus is a Toyota, it took all of the glitz and glitter away from it. Oh, it's just a cheap Jap car. A Lexus, just cheap jack junk. That's the way I view that. That's what goes through my mind. I don't know, maybe you're driving a Lexus and you're saying, well, wait a minute, Gordon, you're calling my car cheap jack junk, and that's the way I view it. And that's because I grew up in the era when we really had automobiles, you know, like Lincoln Continentals, Thunderbirds, Corvettes, and Cadillacs. And a guy that was driving around in a Cadillac, we called that a Jew canoe. And when you had $7,000 in 1955 to plunk out for a new Cadillac Eldorado, by God, you had money. That was a real statement. I don't know what it is today. I take a look at these Cadillacs today and they just look like cheap Jap junk to me. I can't tell the difference between the imports and the domestic cars. Used to be in America, you know, when somebody was driving around in a Volkswagen Beetle, you could see that that was cheap German junk. And when a guy was driving around in a 57 Chevy Bel Air, two-door, lowered by 2 inches in the back, you know, by God, that guy was driving an automobile. All right, so what we're doing here is we are tweaking the definitions for the express purposes of deceiving you. That's the only purpose for the committee, the only purpose for the FDA and the USDA. They're all instruments of big business. And big business gets their ear because they get their appointments and their jobs from legislators, and the legislators are the ones that are getting the campaign contributions from Iowa Beef and from Cargill and Daniels Midland, you know. They're the guys that give the contributions, the bribes to the policymakers, to the politicians. Often ask my students in here, when was the last time you gave a campaign contribution to a political campaign? I can't remember more than two or three hands in 20 years, boys and girls, 20 years of you average Joe Sixpacks that ever gave any money to a political campaign. The people that give money to political campaigns and politicians are businesses, lobbying firms, the oil industry, the meatpacking industry. Those are the people, the insurance industry, they give lots of money, millions and millions of dollars, to politicians. And they expect to get legislation enacted that benefits their industries. Dick Armey, four years ago, I think he retired in 2002. Anyway, or maybe it was 2004, but Dick Armey, he was a representative from Texas, and he put a secret rider into a bill. And it excluded the pharmaceutical industry from being sued by you and me for damages that arise out of vaccinations. So let's picture this. Let's suppose that I cause you a damage. And you sue me and you collect from me because I caused you a damage. It's called a tort claim. All right? So in years past, the pharmaceutical industry or the pharmaceutical company, we'll call it Merck or Pfizer, somebody like that, they produce some vaccine, they shoot you up with it, and it has adverse reactions, it kills you or does something bad to you, and you sued Merck or you sued Pfizer, and they paid for it, just like you sued Ford for the bad Pinto automobile, the failure of the gas tank or whatever. It's called a tort claim, product liability claim also. Now, Dick Armey comes in there, puts this little rider in a bill and says that the pharmaceutical industry is exempt from lawsuits from bad vaccine. Now, do you think Dick Armey is working for the health, safety, and welfare of the general public? Or is he working for the health, safety, and welfare of Merck and Pfizer and the pharmaceutical industry? There's an example of fascism at its finest. And there's an example of a politician who's bought and paid for. That's why they use that term here in the United States. We have the finest Congress that money can buy. There's nothing like it anywhere in the world. We have the finest political process that money can buy. And it's bought and paid for. Now remember, God uses the term gift. It's against the law of God, the law of Moses, to accept a gift. Because it perverts the eyes of the wise. When you accept a gift from somebody, you're beholden to them. That's the purpose for gifts. It's to make you beholden to them. I can remember in a building trades, you know, when the building inspector would come by at Christmas, we'd all give him a bottle of whiskey. The building inspectors have more whiskey. I don't know if they drink the stuff or not, but I'll guarantee you that every building inspector in America is receiving 50 bottles of whiskey every Christmas from the building contractors that he goes out and inspects their jobs. There isn't a building contractor anywhere in America that would fail to buy a bottle of whiskey for the building inspector. And of course, the building inspector is a pretty affable guy. And when you have good relationships with the building inspector, he comes by, inspects your building, and he writes it off for you. That's what happened down in Florida. You see, the Florida building code requires that buildings in Florida be built to withstand 140 mile an hour winds. So when Hurricane Andrew came ashore and blew down Homestead, I could see immediately the bottles of whiskey and the building inspectors in Homestead. I mean, I think it flattened every building in town, didn't it? Was there anything left standing? And Hurricane Andrew was a 140-mile-an-hour wind. Now, let me tell you a little story here. I've got a tower out here that's three stories high. It's 44 feet to the roof. And I had it looked at by an architect. Now, I didn't have the architect look at it before I built it, but when I built it, I just, from my own personal experience and one thing and another, I said, I think that thing will withstand 100-mile-an-hour wind. That's kind of the way I figure. I'm not an architect, and I'm not a building inspector, and I'm a general contractor, and I'm not an expert, but I just kind of figured that. So I happened to have a student in here one day who was an architect. I said, go out there and take a look at that building. And tell me how much wind it's going to take to blow it over. So he went out there and he measured it up, took a look at it, and he said, 140-mile-an-hour wind. And I said, well, that's 40 miles an hour better than I thought it was, because I thought it would withstand 100-mile-an-hour wind, which is kind of what I had in mind. He said, no, sir, 140-mile-an-hour wind is what's going to take to knock that over. So I went a step further, and I put in some concrete piers, and then I took some steel angle iron and sunk it in the concrete piers, and then I leg bolted that onto the four corners of the building, so it ought to take something a little more than 140 miles an hour now. I don't know how much more, but a little bit more. I just want to tell you, boys and girls, that public officials out there are amenable to gifts, and there's nothing illegal about giving a Christmas present to a building inspector. Is there? But let me assure you, boys and girls, that bottle of whiskey smooths over a lot of meetings that I'm going to have with that building inspector in the next year. Got that? And in Boise, Idaho, they used to have three building inspectors, and I was on a first-name basis with all three of them. You never knew which one was coming out to look at your particular job. They rotated them around, and I gave them all a bottle of whiskey. I paid them with a bottle of whiskey. I bought their curry, I bought their favor, just like every other contractor in town. Now, the reason I share that with you is that one day I woke up and I said, you know, this probably isn't exactly kosher. And giving campaign contributions to politicians and lobbyists, currying favor and sleeping in the Lincoln bedroom and fundraising by the president, all that is bribery. Pure and simple. Clinton was a master at it, so was Al Gore, and I don't think any of them have a leg up on George Bush. So that's the way that game is played. All right, I think I've exhausted that portion of the story. I've told you about the graft and the corruption. Here's what they're going to do with the word pasteurization. They're going to stick it up your hind end sideways is what they're going to do. At least that's what their intention is. We got one more story we got to tell you here on this thing of irradiation. So tomorrow night we'll wrap it up with the environment, Hawaii, and some pros and cons on food irradiation next time. Now let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world 7 days a week over the Internet. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Okay, time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.